Blog Talk Radio.
Nalindilele pakumfwa kamangu kababemba kalila.
Through this song, I remember and celebrate the life of Zambia's unsung heroes. I remember Robinson Puta, Titus Mukupo, Lawrence Katilungu, Michael Chilishe, Patu Simoko, Tim Mvula, Teddy Chilambe, Spock Chola, Brian Chwangu, Godfrey Chitalu, Alex Chola, and the unnamed mothers, daughters, and sisters that have inspired us all for the greater good of this country. So hear me out.
Good morning and welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. Saturday, November 29th. It's amazing how time is flying and going up very fast and quickly. Today we have a very, very, very special discussion that we are going to have here, quite informative. And we are looking forward to this discussion because it's based on Zambia's investment and the business economy, the performance of stock markets, and other related factors that we're going to be talking about. Today also is good because I'm not going to do this by myself. We are privileged to have one of our team members, regular contributors, a very resourceful and enterprising gentleman. He is no stranger to us. My co-host for today, Robert Schinga, joining us from, he lives in California. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Nathan. How are you?
Doing good. Your expectations of our discussions today?
I'm looking forward to learning. You can never get enough information, enough knowledge about what's going on at the ground back home. So I think it's going to be an exciting call.
Excellent. And absolutely. This is about learning, sharing information, and getting to the jinx of matters and understanding the business and the stock, how the Lusaka Stock Exchange has performed. Joining us today from Lusaka is Mr. Cesar Siwale. He is the chief executive officer of, I should have asked Robert how to pronounce that. Is it Pangea?
Pangea, I think, is close enough, but if we're wrong, I'm sure he'll correct us.
Okay, Cesar is going to correct us if we are wrong. He's chief executive officer of Pangea Securities. He's also a leading Zambian investor and is involved in a lot of other things. But our discussion today is about the stock, Lusaka Stock Exchange, and Pangea Securities, in conjunction with Zambia Development Agency, are hosting the first ever Zambia Investment Conference 2014. Like we've been promoting and saying this, one of the world's renowned investors, Sir Richard Branson and others, chairman and founder of Virgin Group, is one of the speakers. Let's go to Lusaka and welcome our guest, Mr. Siwale. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, and thanks very much for inviting me to this program.
Please tell us the right pronunciation of, is it Pang? How do you say the name of the company?
I hear two pronunciations, which we accept both of them. I think those who reside in the United States tend to say Pangea,
okay.
And the rest of the world tends to say Pangea.
All right. That is understandable.
Now, Nathan, you see how he phrases that? He says, those make you wet, and then the rest of the world, right?
Of course, we know by the little history and investigation that we have done that Cesar lived in the diaspora once. We shall get to that at one time. Who is Cesar Siwale? Where in Zambia were you born and attend school?
I was born in Lusaka, and at a very early age of my life, my father joined the diplomatic service, and he basically worked on three different continents. But my formative years, I guess, were in Botswana, or in Rome, Italy. I was in boarding school briefly in Malta, and I did my in the UK.
Excellent. And how do you look at your transition of life and how it influenced where you are today?
I don't know. I think, you know, it's these things are usually with everything in life, you know, it's where you find the balance between the two. But I think having lived in different parts of the world and grown up effectively in a very international community, even if I was in Rome, I was in a school that had 60, 70 different nationalities. Mm-hmm. I think it makes you a little bit maybe more rounded and more receptive to sort of the changes you're seeing globally and where people from different parts of the world tend to work together. And typically they follow the culture of that particular entity they represent or the particular venture they've partnered in to work together. Or I guess if you look at athletes who a group of people who are on the same team. So more and more the world, I think it's becoming more wow, colorist and trying to understand the different perspectives that's maybe different from a norm somebody has grown up around. And I think, I guess I've been lucky that from a very early age, I grew up around such a large, diverse number of people, including Zambians that I interacted with in the various countries that my father worked in at the time.
Okay. Now, since you made reference to wherever, whether you were in Rome and whichever parts of the world, you were a member of the diaspora, so to speak. When and why did you make the decision to move back to Zambia?
You know, I think for me, it was always instilled in us that, you know, in the sort of the late 70s and early 80s, that Zambia was going through some difficult times, and
yes,
yet we were probably getting access to some of the best education that was available in the particular regions that we lived in. And my parents just always instilled this sense of debt or giving back to the country. And my dad always instilled on us that, you know, at some point all of us will have to go back home and give back through this privilege we were able to enjoy through one of his fringe benefits, being a diplomat and his kids being put in some decent schools. So I always knew that this was something I was going to do, to move back home. And I just reached a point, especially living in the UK as a student without the diplomatic immunity, it was a very different lifestyle to that living mm-hmm. in a diplomatic home in Rome. And so that decision was made very quickly. I was very homesick, I think, in the UK.
It's interesting. I like what you say, that it was a different lifestyle. And then you, of course, probably you come back to Zambia and there are all these realities, you know. I think it's those realities of transitioning from wherever somebody's living, Europe, Asia, America, Australia, that really is the challenge. Because my question I'm trying to put to you is that, what advice would you give to anyone considering moving back home? What do they need to do?
You know, I think everyone's journey is going to be different. I think the fundamental to that process is somebody coming around mentally that this is a decision they've made and they would be moving back to Zambia. And I think depending on which point in their life that particular person is under, that journey. So I left Zambia at a very young age. I was 4 years old. I came back in my mid-20s. So I really had to build up my friendships effectively from scratch. I had a few friends that had also returned from the diplomatic corps. Those were probably my initial friends, but you know, for those that left at a very young age, it's very, very difficult, I think. And you need to balance between, you know, the pluses of what you're used to in a particular geography that you have lived in, and then coming to Zambia and just accepting that you will not have the same things in Zambia, or if they're there, there's a slight modification to them, which effectively for those that have been in diplomatic families is probably a lot easier, because moving from Gaborone to Malta or Malta to Rome, those are very, very different jurisdictions. Obviously, coming back home has got a sense of permanency. And I think it's the ease into that transition. I think a lot of the diaspora I have met tend to want to move back if they're guaranteed a job in a particular multinational organization, earning a similar salary from where they were, and that can be challenging because those sort of positions are very limited. I think the ones that have done very well for themselves here, from what I've seen, are the ones that have ventured out and used the skill set they have built abroad and effectively set up businesses here, starting from scratch, going through some pain of the learning curve, accepting that things sometimes don't move as fast as you would like, and it's just to factor in that patience in your business plan, if I can call it that. And also, it's not necessarily a bad idea as well to build in that return breaks and breather moments that you can actually get out of Zambia and then come back again. That helps ease your transition, I think. And also starting to look at what are the positives that you can appreciate about here. I mean, there are many reasons I love living in Zambia that I wouldn't be able to experience in the UK or in Rome.
Cesar, it's Robert. Before we get into discussing the Zambia Investment Conference, I thought maybe you could just kind of give us an overview of what the Zambian investment climate looks like. And then maybe if you could, somewhere there, also kind of give an idea, just kind of bring us up to speed on your background. I know you're in the brokerage industry. And just for the sake of everybody, the example he gave of the Zambian in the diaspora who wants to come and work for a multinational company, that's me being trying to apply for a job at Tangier without much luck. So please, if you could, the investment climate back home, and if you could also give us a perspective from the brokerage industry as well, because I know that's part of your bread and butter. Are there, Cesar? Nathan, are there? I think we lost Cesar.
Matilda, have we lost him?
Let me try to connect him again.
I know he was...
Okay, let me try this again.
It was breaking up a little, but you might still be there.
Okay, thank you. We have quite a number of people that have joined us today. Of course, our regulars. It's good to have Dr. Patrick. Good morning, Dr. Patrick.
Good morning.
When did you last talk to Robert?
he's been forsaking me. I've been looking to hear from him and about him and what he's doing, but Robert, I don't know. My brother, he's just...
That's not fair. I'm always looking for an opportunity to be privileged enough to be in your presence, Dr. Patrick.
How are you, my brother?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Excellent.
All right, in Canada, Roger... minus 25, did you say?
Minus 21.
Okay.
Wow.
And we are okay.
And I know.
Minus 21, it's snowing. So the only good thing I can say, it's weekend, so I can spend time with good people on ZBTR.
Hey, yeah.
I know. Zebron, are you following the discussion?
Huh? Yeah, I think
Matilda is back.
Okay, Matilda is back. All right. Cesar, did you hear, Robert's question?
Yes, I did. And the whole dropping is just part of life.
That's where the manager was.
Where?
222. Anyone want me to get to Zoom and tell you what's done?
Okay, sorry about that. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things we've been working on over the last few days is putting some information together with regards to the main theme of this discussion we're going to have. And we've done a recent overview of the capital market. And it's a very interesting story if you look at our journey as opposed to comparing it to other markets. But it's just a very quick background. You know, the Lusaka Stock Exchange, unlike other stock exchanges in the world, it was really developed as a platform to allow for privatization or the completing of the process of privatization. So any securities, any shares that were not sold to multinationals by the state, they were offloaded on the stock exchange to the Zambian public. The setting up of the Lusaka Stock Exchange was completed in 1994, so we're entering our 20th year of the capital market. But the first listing happened in 1995, which is really ironic, right? Because most part of the world is you've had the companies and investors come together, and as that platform has grown, they have then started to create rules in terms of how they will trade shares in different companies. And that's how New York Stock Exchange, London, even Zimbabwe, that's how those markets were developed. Whilst we sort of had overnight this state-of-the-art stock exchange, and for nearly a year, it didn't have a single company listed on it. And that first year of trading in 1995, for the whole year, was something like a turnover of $1 million in the whole year.
Wow.
So obviously the market has evolved since then. There are now 22, 23 listed companies on the Lusa. We have seen the trading volumes increase since then. But that said, I think the market really peaked in 2008. I think Zambia was on a very positive roll. Zambia had hit the completion point. The debt at the time had been written off. It was about $7 billion. So the country had a clean balance sheet. The Mwanawasa administration did all the right things by not coming back into the market and crowding out. So we saw T-bills, which were really the only instruments that were there on the market, drop from as high as yields of 40-50%, drop to mid single digits, as low as 6-7%, and they stayed at those levels for a very long time. So a lot of capital moved to the capital market, and we saw the Lusaka Stock Exchange completely boom. I mean, in 2008, we did Celltrail's IPO. It was a $200 million IPO. It was five times oversubscribed, both local and international. Local participation alone was a subscription of $110 million for a single offering, which if you look at the previous transaction, with a lot of work domestically, the issuer managed to raise $5 million. So it was a very, very interesting time then. Unfortunately, we then experienced our first crash, and Zambia went through two challenges. One, the incumbent head of state passed away in office. And second, that was followed by the whole global crisis. And the Lusaka Stock Exchange took a very big knock. And it's only now we've seen this in the last 12, 18 months, where we've seen the volume start to pick up again. And with retail investors building up a little bit more confidence, internationals coming back into the market as well. But I think to really trigger the stock exchange back into the 2008 levels, the market still needs a large IPO of the magnitude of a sales sell at the time. And I anticipate there's probably one or two that will be coming next year.
Caesar, you know better than we do that in your industry, confidence in the market is key. With the up and down of the Lusaka Stock Exchange, or the up down and potentially heading back up, in addition to that, the political environment, and just Zambia's overall performance on the world market, how much confidence do you feel that the international market has on Zambia as an economy, and then specifically with regards to the financial market?
You know, the irony to that question is the international investors, they came back into the market a lot earlier than Zambian investors. The challenge they had was one of liquidity. They were coming in with much larger tickets. And again, because of how the privatization initiative took place, how the stock exchange was created, you typically find that the controlling shareholder has put significant levels of equity in the company. That is then followed by the local institutional investors who typically buy and hold because they're all very cash rich at the moment. The likes of NAPS and African Life are constantly collecting net positive receipts even after the contributions they have to make, they're still sitting on cash, and they don't have enough products to put the money into. And so with that background, you find that liquidity is a big issue. The international's bigger concern is liquidity, not the Zambian economy. They tend to do their assessment based on the performance of the companies, and you can see whether it's Zambian Breweries, whether it's Lafarge, Zambia Sugar, even Zambia, despite the blip that it's gone through in the recent couple of years, if you look at its net asset value basis, it still has some very solid assets that are in there.
Just a quick question. You made a point about they make the decisions mostly based on the performance of the company and not so much about the government. But in a country as small as Zambia, where government policy could potentially impact the way a seemingly independent company is operating, wouldn't an incoming government or potential government policies also have an impact on the decisions that they make with regards to whether they invest or not in an industry or company?
Yeah, I mean, and the question is specifically with internationals. Of course, government policies is important, but as a portfolio manager sitting in New York, what that portfolio manager is doing, he's not looking at Zambia in isolation. He's looking at Zambia in comparison to the other markets. And if you sort of look around, using the term one of my colleagues has used, they did indicate, for example, in the situation of SI-33 and SI-55 and the confusion that caused. But compared to what is around Zambia, even compared to markets like South Africa or Egypt or the riots that were in Kenya in the 2000s, or the situations that have been in Nigeria in the recent past, Zambia still looks like a very, very safe destination. In fact, only this week I had a portfolio manager in Zambia meeting with Zanaco, and his comment to them was actually, "You guys, you Zambians are very hard on yourselves, because if you look at what is happening in Zambia in this transition you're in, the reason why people are so charged and they're so engaging is because you have a true democracy, right? Whilst if you look, using his words, if you look, he said, if you look at a country like South Africa, that is a one-party state. All they've done is they've moved from the National Party and they've moved to the ANC. And within a very short space of time, in the coming years, it will be very unlikely that the majority of the South Africans would vote against the ANC, despite the quality of leadership they have. And this week, President Zuma was on record saying that if the ANC is ever taken out of office, it would be a disaster for South Africa. Then you look at Botswana, that's purely a monarchy. You look at Zimbabwe, we don't have to talk about the situation there. You look at Tanzania, you look at the DRC, you go further afield, the story is the same. And in Africa, Zambia has had 5 presidents. We're in transition to the next one. We've had an acting president who is a white Zambian. And frankly, for us on the ground, we've heard more about the color of his skin from the international media than locally. Right now, a lot of people love Dice Scott in Zambia. And what bothers him is not so much because of what descent he has, but because of the way the constitution was drafted, which is a much broader issue than one of about whether somebody's white or not. And so a lot of internationals, they look at Zambia in that context. The thing I think we need to deal with is consistency in applying our policies. And if you look at SI-33 and SI-55, when they came in, they caused a lot of problems for businesses, and businesses had to change how they operate in Zambia. And then 18 months later, those SIs were scrapped. And that caused new problems because of the systems and investments companies have been made. Whether if you look on the tail side, for example, with tenants at Manda Hill and Levy, where leases have been converted into kwacha, now there's negotiations going on again with landlords, having negotiated back into dollars. So it's, I think the challenge we have is an issue of consistency. But in terms of political stability, I'm yet to hear from anybody internationally where they feel Zambia is not stable. Even some of the challenges that we had a couple of weeks ago, literally, you know, that event happened on my way and on the road that's on my way home. There was a number of tires burning on the streets. No fatalities, nothing close to what's happening in the U.S. in relation to Ferguson or what is happening in Rome at the moment with unemployment levels there. So I think it becomes a function of how we package ourselves and how Zambia sells its story out there. And then we've got policies that are not with a five-year horizon, but a much longer term. I think that's really what domestically and internationally people are looking at. But compared to others in the continent, Zambia still has a fantastic story, even from a political perspective.
That's encouraging.
Talk Radio. We are talking to Mr. Sizwe Siwale, the Chief Executive Officer of Pangea Securities. And our discussion is mainly we want to learn about the Zambia Investment Conference. There is a Facebook page if you want to get information about that. It's Zambia Investment Conference. It's on Facebook. Sizwe, you rightly pointed out that the Lusaka Stock Exchange is 20 years old this year. How active has been the Zambian citizens on the stock market? Can you give us the trends and the growth from the time it was set up to date from the citizens' involvement point of view?
I think the ones that have been very active, to be candid about it, is the other institutional investors. As I've said, mm-hmm. a lot of them have net receipts on a monthly basis at the magnitude of $40 to $50 million. Obviously, that's a sign of that the economy is growing. More people are insuring their assets. More people are contributing to pensions, whether it's the state pension or private ones. The challenge that's there, I think, for the citizen is still a learning curve to go through. I don't believe the vast majority of the citizens truly understand the capital market. I think that's driven by and large where, you know, the market came to effectively a standstill post 2008. You know, from that period, Madison was the first IPO, and that was five years later. And IPOs are ones that drive the market through publicity, through the novelty of a new company coming forward. So I think a lot more, both from the brokers, people like ourselves, the stock exchange, and the government too. I think more needs to be done on that side. Obviously, the government needs to make a view whether the capital market should become the driver of the Zambian economy. We were looking at the history of how the Lusaka Stock Exchange had been created, and the plan by the IMF and World Bank, who drove this process, was that by 1999 there'd be 25 listed companies on the Lusa. That didn't happen. And those 25 were supposed to come out of privatization. Today, we only have between 15 and 18 private companies that came out of the privatization initiative. The rest, like Matt said, were willing issuers to come to the market. So clearly that privatization process, something went wrong. It's from our perspective, it's crazy that we don't have a single mining company that's listed on the Lusaka Stock Exchange. That doesn't make any sense to me. Yet, it was a condition when these mines were being privatized that they should offer shares to Zambians on the Lusa. And you can imagine if that was done, all this debate that we have about transparency of the mines and so on and so forth, if a mining company was listed on the Lusa, then they would have to publish their results like any other company. They would have to hold an AGM. They would have to explain to their shareholders and the public at large why they have the performances that they're reporting. And to make that happen, it doesn't take a lot. It's there in the SPAs. When these companies were all being privatized, these were conditions that were set by government. So out of 300 companies that were privatized, 18 have ended up on the Lusaka Stock Exchange. Even if we discount some of those that they were not viable and they didn't continue and they've since been liquidated, we see a lot of these companies, we see that there's a balance that's still out there, that there's no reason why today we shouldn't have had close to 100 companies listed on the Luce. Zimbabwe trades $2 million a day. Zambia trades $150,000 a day. That doesn't make any sense. And yet the Zambian economy is 10 times the size of the one in South Africa. In Zimbabwe, the Zimbabwean economy has shrunk. So, you know, there's some fundamental things there to look at. And to put into perspective, the JST trades $1.5 billion a day. So we've got a very, very long way to go.
Caesar, that's a very serious situation. Before we go to the conference, I think, let me just dive into that, what you have just brought up about the companies that were privatized and the condition that they needed to list on the Osaka Stock Exchange. What's the problem? Is this lack of enforcement on part of the lawgivers, or what's going on there?
I think it's a number of factors, and it's a collective effort, and for us to decide what role do we want the capital market to play in Zambia.
Uh-huh.
And I think you're seeing a new generation of people in leadership, whether it's in government, whether it's with the stock exchange, whether it's brokers, whether it's commercial banks, that are sort of raising these questions, and they're saying, look, it's great that all these Zambian entrepreneurs that have emerged post 2004, 2005 have grown using commercial bank debt, but how do we get them to use the capital market? And if you look in other markets, take Chile, for example, as much as they only have a handful of mining companies like Codelco that are listed in that market, because of the sheer size they bring, they are the backbone of that market, which then means it's a lot easier for that economy to diversify a lot faster because there's a lot of savings that are being mobilized into the capital market. And the likes of NAPSA locally or AFLife are not taking the excess cash they have and putting in a bank account and earning a quarter of a percent or 2% on the dollar, but they can actually put in the capital market and help businesses grow and emerge. And that's what, if you look at Chile today, as much as the backbone of the capital markets, as I said, is the mining of the likes of Codelco. When you look closely, you actually find that Chile is a strong financial hub. Chile has got a strong agri base, and the vast majority of the companies that are listed on that stock exchange are actually not mining companies. That is how the mining companies have supported the diversification of that economy by savings being mobilized into that market. And the citizen then pays attention. And I think probably from my perspective, and from a Pangea perspective at least, we are looking to explore how do we make the capital market a little bit more active, and how do you get some of the mining companies come forward and address the issue of liquidity at the same time as well. So it's not a simple fix, and it's something that needs buy-in from all stakeholders.
Okay. One more question on the business environment before Robert picks it up, we switch to the conference. Caesar, there is this belief that it's expensive and bureaucratic to do or establish a business in Zambia. What's your response to that?
I guess the first question is what's the comparative? In terms of opening a business in Zambia, i.e. registering a company with PACRA, that's pretty much a straightforward process. And a lot of the red tape that used to exist before has been cut out. I think where we face challenges is dealing with issues of how do you now make those companies that have been established efficiently operating. So you've got the likes of ZDA, which unfortunately very few Zambians actually take the time to go and register with ZDA for an IPPA, which gives you certain exemptions depending which sectors you're in from a tax perspective, so it should ease your setting up. There's been a lot of reform that is taking place in relation to legislation. If you look on the financial services side, which is the sector that we're in, there's probably a need of consolidation of some of that legislation. So sometimes what the Companies Act, Securities Act, Bank of Zambia Act, Pension and Insurance Act say, you've got five pieces of paper that sometimes contradict each other. And there are certain businesses that will overlap all of those legislations So you find you have to go and apply for 5 different licenses. And so that could be expensive and bureaucratic. But again, it's, for me, about Zambia, it's the journey. That is the bit that I get excited about. It's, this is an issue that is recognized. So you've got public, you've got private sector development program, for example, which is run by the CCM, they have a cabinet office. They're driving the process of how do you harmonize all of these rules. And you've got to look from where we came from. I mean, you know, 7-10 years ago, the country was heavily indebted. There were no entrepreneurs on the ground. There were hardly any Zambian business owners. You go back 20 years ago, the economy was pretty much on its knees. And you look at the journey and the tough decisions that were made in the 1990s. We can debate whether some of them are right or wrong, but tough decisions were made, which I think for me is more important than sort of sitting on the fence. And you look at the Zambia that we talk about today, it's chalk and cheese for the place that I found when I came here. And it's the question then becomes, and this is what we have tried to build into the conference, the question becomes, okay, 50 years of independence, 20 years of a capital market, now how are we going to shape the next 20 years, 50 years? And some of these legislations need to be modified. Some of them need to be harmonized. Some of the institutional investors, like NAPS and others, probably need to revisit some of their investment guidelines, and that process is ongoing. But even at NAPSA today, when you look at the team that's there, it's dominated by, at least on the executive side, by individuals that have come from the private sector who have owned their own businesses in the past. So the transformation that is happening, some could say it's not happening fast enough. Some of them could say it's happening too quickly and we need to digest first. And the jury, for me, is still our economy that's growing at 7% per annum. You speak to any international analyst and locally, they'll tell you that Iran is there for the next 10 years. That, for me, is the exciting journey I enjoy being part of.
Caesar, so far, almost everything that you've made reference to is encouraging and shed a positive light on the economy. One of the challenges I think we have being out in the diaspora is many of us have access to that the information about how Zambia is performing, but not many of us are able to be players or partake in those opportunities. With regards to financial market, there's a financial market specifically, but also just investing in general, investing in Zambia in general. How would you encourage the Zambians, the diaspora, to take part in that? Because it seems to be a lack of a conduit between the diaspora and the opportunities in Zambia. And for the interest of full disclosure, you have provided me with some guidance on how to try and encourage more investment into the country. But in your view, how can the Zambian diaspora get more involved in investment in the capital markets, one, and then two, just investment in the country in general? Where would we begin?
Yeah. I mean, typically, for those who are not too familiar with the country, so including some of the diaspora who might have been away for 30, 40 years and so on and so forth, they probably have an image of a very different landscape. So obviously the easiest and safest entry into the market is through the stock exchange. You only transact through regulated entities. The rules are very clear and the brokers know how they should conduct business. My word of caution would be one to just have the patience with challenges that might be there with liquidity. But really, with that liquidity issue, we're talking about people who are coming to the market with orders of $1 million, $5 million. Those books tend to be quite difficult to fill. And then that said, you'll find that most of the brokers also generate a lot of research both for the listed companies and on the country in general. Some of this information goes out on a daily basis. The research is obviously on as and when a particular event happens with the company. And I think getting on some of those mailing lists is a good way to start getting a feel of exactly what is happening on the ground. And that information coming not from an online or newspaper publication, but really entity parties that are neutral, and it's in their interest to give information that is almost quickly see through what the reality is, combined with their own due diligence. So typically, that information tends to be quite balanced, and I think that's a good way to get an initial feel. In terms of investing for what's on the ground here, ultimately, I think somebody has got to get on a plane and come back, kick the tires, meet different people, do some homework, and it's one thing reading about this transition from afar. It's another thing being here, and it's, you know, as I said, I had a portfolio manager here. He said, from what I was reading and what I'm feeling on the ground, this is just another day. It's unreal. There are African countries where everything is stable, in inverted commas, from a political perspective, with a head of state in place, and they are more unstable than the current status that Zambia is in. So I think it makes a difference being on the ground here and having a feel of what's happening. Yet, somebody would say, well, today there's a conversion, what's happening, and these reports online that
I think we lost him again. Is he there?
Looks like we lost him.
We lost him again. Okay. Matilda, try to bring him again and let's...
Yeah, I was getting ready to I think this has been a good time to transition into the conference. I'm itching to find out about how all that came about. Maybe we can grab him. He just sent me a message that the call dropped. Is someone calling him?
Yeah, Matilda is going to connect him again. Those of us
How come Matilda didn't say good morning? Matilda didn't say good morning.
Because she's busy. We're talking to Peter Sgwale, the Chief Executive Officer of Pangaea Securities. We shall be getting into talking about the conference now at which Sir Richard Branson is going to be speaking. I also want to remind everybody that we might have a show tomorrow, Sunday, with Mr. Hichilema Hakainde. His campaign team are sponsoring the whole thing. They've reached out to us. We don't have any squams with anybody. We are an open and non-partisan aligned platform. So please take note of that. By the way, Robert, Roger, and everybody, you may not remember this. 4th December, which is the Thursday, is going to mark 20 years since Zambia Airways was demised or was declared whatever it was. And coming Saturday, I'll be talking to some of the families who were former Zambia Airways employees, and they'll be sharing some of the things that happened and led to that from an inside point of view, from an employee who used to be a Zambia Airways, who worked for Zambia Airways for a long time. So that's our show next week, everybody. Roger will be talking about the Zambia Airways demise and the potential of an airline industry in Zambia and everything else. Whilst everybody else is preoccupied with the elections will go on, and business also needs to go on. Okay, so let's not be, we can't just be put into one box and just talk about the convention and all those things. Am I on target, Roger, here?
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. You are on target, as most, maybe even our guests can say something to this. You find you go to Zambia, people are carrying on with business. It is we in the diaspora and Facebook who are so engrossed into what is happening in PF. But business is going on, and it has to be taken care of. Yeah, that's true.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Is Caesar back with us? Okay, I guess...
Is Matilda there?
She's trying to connect him back. That's the beauty of teamwork. You have other people doing technical stuff, and others are doing social media and Twitter and everything else. And we shall be getting to talking about the conference. Robert, I just discovered something here that it looks like the registration closed on November 18th. So I guess they are done, but we can still learn about it and what's going on. Probably we can send some people from... Let's find out from him also if we have any people attending this, apart from the guest speakers, if we have any Zambians from the diaspora attending.
I think that would be good. And even with the registration being closed, I think one of the other things that would be valuable to know is this a one-time deal or is it coming up again? And if so, you know, how we can make sure that we're ahead of the game when it does come through.
Yeah,
Robert,
that's right.
Nathan,
yes.
I have Lisa back on the line.
Oh, perfect. I love technology, especially when it actually works, but... welcome back, Caesar. If you're okay, I'll go ahead and just transition straight into the conference. I think one of the things that got all of us excited, at least I'm speaking for myself, one of the things that got all of us excited, not that I don't have any confidence in your ability, Caesar, but as soon as I saw Richard Branson on there, it just brought my view of you to a completely different level. So just give us an overview of the conference, and I think really we just want to know how you brought Richard Branson in.
Yeah. So I think the conference really touches on everything we've discussed so far. And...
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I have struggled with for the last sort of 15 years being with Pangaea is, you know, a lot of private equity groups hiding in Zambia. And as much as we've gone through the pain, we've done all the right things, we haven't really done a great job at telling the world who we are, what we have to offer, what competitive advantage we have. And for the last 10 years or so, a lot of presentations I've done, I've always made reference to the fact that Zambia is not just a copper story. There's a lot more that's going on for us here. We should be the hub for the region, both Southern and Central Africa. It should not be Johannesburg or Durban. The people here are some of the most amazing people you ever meet in the world. We're very humble, we're very unassuming, we're very welcoming, and we don't show the world this in the right way. And a lot of international guys that have come into Zambia looking for opportunities, and I'm not talking about privatization, talking about new investments, I find typical of them would say, look, don't say anything, okay, just stay quiet about Zambia. Don't let the other guys know what's going on here, because there's so much going on for us, and international can see the opportunities that are there. And even South Africa, that is used as an entry point to Africa or as a reference point for all of us, there's a lot more stringent controls over taking money out of the country, even bringing money in. This economy here is very relaxed, even with SI-55. SI-55 is extra pieces of paper that you have to fill in, which made it yet more bureaucratic, but it didn't introduce exchange controls in a lot of people's faces. That's not what happened with SI-55. And I think a lot of people lost hope for that. And so because we're so humble and so sort of subdued, we don't do such a great job of standing on a podium and bragging and saying, look, this is who we are. This is a great opportunity you're missing in this country. Wonderful people. We've got 8 neighboring countries. Our market is not 13 million people. We're a market of 250 million people. We don't do that. And I had somebody say to me, well, Caesar, you're always complaining about this, and why don't you guys do something about it? It was actually Mr. Sokota, Joe Sokota. And we started talking, and it started off as a light conversation and ultimately evolved into doing an investment conference, 50 years of independence, 20 years of the capital market. And off the back of that, the idea was really to showcase Zambian entrepreneurs. So when you look at the agenda for the conference, none of the companies that are presenting are actually clients of ours, because typically our clients are capital markets. These are new businesses that some of them I've never heard of before. We reached out to them. We explained why this was important. We indicated to them that we could bring in international family offices, high net worths, that we believe would be interested in their story, but we needed to tell the Zambian story. And then simultaneously, we took the view that there's also a need of shift of mindset, because no economy will grow or evolve if it's purely dependent on foreign entities coming to Zambia and setting up businesses here, which will employ Zambians. And I don't believe that's a sustainable model. We need to have Zambians that want to become industrialists, not just financial consultants like myself. We need to build things on the ground here.
Yes.
That will be the pillar and the backbone of this economy, and utilize some of that copper to build that infrastructure. And whether we're doing roads, whether we're doing rail like Mr. Cavendelli, whether we're doing the next Zambief, whether we're building a logistics and distribution hub, yeah, it's one thing to talk about it, but who's going to build that infrastructure? I think we need to be gutsy and brave enough to believe that we can do it. And to be honest with you, I don't get that sense. I didn't get that sense. And so let's showcase this together with some international, and I can share some of the experiences as well. So we've got 70 people at this conference, and approximately about 20, 25 of those are international. I mean, obviously, the delegates. So.
Now, you had mentioned, on part of the, on your flyer, actually, on the correspondence that's gone out regarding the conference, there's a collaboration with ZDA. Could you just talk briefly about how that collaboration came out? But before you do, I just got a notification that there's a pressing question that has come through. Nathan, you said there's a question that is coming through?
Yeah, let's see if with short time that we have, if we can. Roger, did you want to throw in your question now?
Just a quick one, Caesar, and this is my standard question to anyone who comes. How exposed is this conference to the people who are outside Lusaka? That is number one. And then number two, you know, every economy, Caesar, is run by small companies, and they have trouble getting to capital markets. Is there anything you are discussing at Pangea to reach the small guy along the street?
Okay, that's actually a very good question. So the first part to it is with relation to the conference. We have showcased our presence by putting digital advertising material within Livingston and the Copper Belt. We obviously have taken up space in the newspapers. We've made sure articles are run. We have featured on radio that provides national coverage. The conference has also been discussed on Movie TV and ZNBC. So from that perspective, we're trying to reach as many people as possible. I have spent time on the Copper Belt now on two occasions, speaking to some of the groups that are up there, especially the session on mining services is one we are very passionate about. So I spent time in Luansha, I spent time in Solwezi, I spent time in Indola and Kitwe, went up to Chingola, just speaking to some of the players there, trying to get a better understanding of some of the challenges they've had, their perspective on the conference. We've had people in the Copper Belt to reach out to us as well to get a little bit more information how they can participate. Then, in relation to your question of access to capital, I think this one will always be one that is challenging, I think, in Zambia. But in particular to the capital market, a couple of months ago, in the third quarter of this year, the stock exchange finally launched the alternative market. Brian Kendall, who is the CEO of the LUSA, will be part of the conference where he will talk, I think, at some length about how the alternative market will work. But overall, its job will be to be less onerous in terms of requirements to list on that tier, and also to focus on more central disclosure issues that are not onerous financially on a business, and create that alternative market tier. I mean, hopefully those businesses grow a little bit faster. They're able to build in the corporate governance requirements as they grow, and then move up to the main board. So that's sort of the spirit of that. Then in addition to that, you've got various groups in country now that are talking a lot about social funding, impact funding, even in 2015 itself, you will see a lot more entities doing this. Already there's one that's launching on the 3rd, and also with the presence of the conference, an entity abbreviation PEP, Private Enterprise Program, and they will be running some initiatives to be able to attract both equity and debt into SMEs, and SMEs by Zambian definition.
Let's conclude with this question, Cesar. Just you can respond like in 2 minutes. Is this conference the first of its kind, and are you going to make it an annual event?
The first conference, although targeting different groups, was done in 2008 by Euromoney. That was extremely successful. But it did focus purely on large corporates that had a very large international participation. I think this, I guess you could say, is the first conference that is targeting entrepreneurs that have a significant impact on the economy and is targeting Zambian, not only companies that are panelists, but also Zambians to come forward that believe they've got a role to change this economy. Pangaea hasn't done this as a new business line for itself. Pangaea knows really where our core business is. We've really done this because we felt it's something that needed to be done. We needed to showcase the country. There's a massive opportunity that's there for Zambia. We believe the ones in the diaspora can participate, even from the diaspora, by finding right partners on the ground here in Zambia. That obviously involves you coming on the ground and meeting with potential partners, whether it's family members, whether it's third parties. The international team to do this. I mean, we are, as Robert knows, we are in the process of launching Pizza Hut in Zambia in the next couple of weeks. We've had Zambians in Texas being trained by Yam, who owns the brand. We've had Zambians in South Africa being trained. The operation is ready to launch, and the idea is to open 15, 20 shops in the next 3 years and build up the logistics that will support that business from Zambia, and then we can support Pizza Hut in the region, not Zambia supported from South Africa. And so that partnership is with a family office from Switzerland and a family office from London. So I think if Europeans are prepared to get on planes, meet people like myself or others whom they didn't know before, and find that actually certain aspects we aligned, I can't see why Zambia is in a diaspora, very successful in Canada or in the U.S., getting on the plane, coming to Zambia, finding Zambia that we can partner with and let those on the ground run and tend those businesses around. It's a must. I don't believe that the diaspora necessarily has to pack and come back to Zambia. I think everybody can contribute in many different different contexts. Those who want some boots on the ground, this is a very welcome to come. Lots of work to be done here.
Excellent. That was our show for today. Cesar Siwale, the Chief Executive Officer of Pangaea Securities, sharing with us the performance of the Zambian stock market and the upcoming Zambia Investment Conference. Cesar, thank you for taking the time and spending the weekend with us. I also thank you, my co-host Robert, for facilitating and connecting us to Cesar. Always resourceful and helpful. Like we announced, Saturday we'll be talking to some members of the former Zambia Airways, and it will be marking 20 years since it was liquidated on 4th of December this week. Like I said, if the campaign team for HH confirms, keep watching our Facebook page. We might have a show tomorrow. Everybody, have a good weekend, and thank you for joining us.
Alimu manjamu. zaziva kuti apo niko limba chifukwa ni mwamuna afu niko butikila banja kuti ni bambo wa nyumba.